I can't leave. Savannah had near shouted in desperation, panicked at the very idea of leaving him behind. But they couldn't leave her here alone, could they? Jim and Tanya Loveridge exchanged a look. Sweetie, it isn't safe for you here. We can't leave you here in good faith. We'll take care of you. She shook her head, staring among the three Loveridges. I'm not leaving. I can't leave. My father is out there. He's probably looking for me right now, she protested. We can't leave you, Malachi said softly. I'm not leaving, she said, holding her chin up and putting her hands on her hips. She couldn't understand why they thought they were suddenly in charge of her. She wasn't an orphan. Her father was out there somewhere. He was probably furious with her for worrying him. She wouldn't worry him more by walking away now. Malachi looked at his parents. Can we stay here a day or two until her father returns? His question took her by surprise. She'd hoped they'd stay, but thought it would be the adults who insisted, not him. He cared about her. He really cared, and didn't want to leave her alone. And what a relief that she hadn't had to ask. She didn't think she could have gotten up the courage. Savannah looked at Malachi's parents, hoping they would agree. She wasn't going to go with them. She couldn't. You could stay in the house, she suggested. Bob didn't have any family around. This might all be better in a day or two, too. Then you could take your tents and your campers. You won't have to leave anything behind and come back for it, she pointed out. She could see their hesitation and looked to Malachi, silently pleading with him to convince his parents it was a good plan. Let us talk about this, Jim answered them, a slight scowl on his face. Your mother and I need a minute. Malachi grabbed her hand and led her out of the barn, giving his parents some privacy. She looked around the farm, wondering if whoever had stolen the horses would still be nearby. They would have left the area, right? The worry was one more reason to hope the Loveridges would stay, at least until her dad returned. She and Malachi walked around the area in front of the barn before passing by the other adults, who'd set to burying the farmer, and headed for the house. We should wait for my parents, Malachi whispered. We're only going in the house, Savannah promised. I need to see if Dad's inside, or maybe he left a note. Malachi shook his head nervously, but followed her to the front door that was partially opened. She knocked, feeling a little ridiculous, considering that the man who lived in the house was lying dead outside. There could be someone in here, the someone who killed him, Malachi hissed. Then the horses would be here, she pointed out, pushing the door further open. Hello, she called out, stepping inside. The living room with the worn couch and the old recliner looked just as it had every time she'd come over to visit or to give the man the rent for the week. It looked completely normal. They kept moving, turning left to go through an archway that led into the old kitchen. Wow, Malachi said, the single word summing up what they found. The cupboards were all hanging open. There was a bag of rice spilled on the floor, various spices canisters and boxes tossed about, and the refrigerator door left wide open as well. A funky smell was already starting to develop. The kitchen had been ransacked. I guess whoever killed him wanted his food, Savannah said, shaking her head. And carried it off on his horses. Malachi walked to the refrigerator and closed the door, as if that would make it all better. Savannah turned around, taking in the sight of the mess, and wondering what would have made someone act so horribly. Val? They heard Jim call out. In here, he replied. His parents appeared in the kitchen a minute later, their faces revealing their own shock at the scene before them. Tanya's mouth opened to form words, but then she closed it without speaking, her eyes wide as she surveyed the damage as if it wasn't real. No way. We can't, Jim, Tanya exclaimed. Jim reached out and put an arm around his wife's shoulders. Shh, it's okay. We'll be fine. It's the right thing to do. What's going on? Malachi asked. We've talked about it, and we'll stick around for a day or two and wait for Savannah's father to get back. If he doesn't show up, we'll have to leave. We can't stay here, especially after seeing this, he said, waving an arm to encompass the kitchen. Happy for the short reprieve, Savannah smiled in thanks. She just knew her father would be back sometime that day, even if he had to walk from wherever it was he'd gone to. He couldn't be all that far. And she knew her dad was tough. He would fight back if anyone tried to hurt him. She refused to believe anyone would shoot her father like they had the farmer. No way. There was no way this world would leave her without any parents. Plus, nobody would have reason to hurt him. All he had on him worth stealing would be his truck, and that was no good at the moment if things around town were any sign to judge by. Thank you, she said sincerely, focusing on Malachi's mother, since she knew Tanya was against the decision. The woman nodded, but it was her husband who answered. Savannah, I'm willing to put my faith in God to keep us safe. I know how important it is to stay with family, especially in times of crisis. We'll offer you our company for 2 days, he said firmly. Okay, I'm sure he'll be back today, any minute now. Jim looked her directly in the eye. This is a dangerous place. My family is in no position to hang around here. We aren't violent people. We don't know how to defend ourselves. And honestly, I don't believe I would ever be able to raise my hand against another human. I need to do what's best for my family. We'll stay for 2 days, max. If your father doesn't return, you can come with us, he said, as if that were her only option. Savannah nodded, not agreeing with him, but not openly arguing with him. I understand. I appreciate you staying. She would smile and pretend to go along with whatever Malachi's parents said, for now. Why don't we clean this up? Tanya suggested, clapping her hands together. Clean it up? Savannah repeated. Well, I can't function in a messy kitchen. Jim, you and Mal go help take care of the farmer. He deserves a proper burial. We'll have a small service for him later. There was a new note of matriarchal determination in the woman's voice now, and Savannah was a little surprised by her take-charge attitude. In the brief time she had known Tanya Loveridge, she'd been meek, leaving all the decisions to her husband. Even 5 minutes ago, she had appeared to be shaken to her very core. This was a complete change in her personality. Savannah could actually admire this new woman standing in front of her and doling out orders like a drill sergeant. Jim looked proud as well. "We'll do that," he said, before giving his wife a quick kiss on the cheek. Malachi waved before they walked out of the kitchen. Savannah watched them leave, wishing Malachi could have stayed to help. Being alone with his mother felt awkward at best. She turned to look around the kitchen once again, watching as Tanya closed cupboard doors and then disappeared into the dining room. She returned a few minutes later with a broom and a dustpan, smiling as she came back into the kitchen. For her part, Savannah began picking up items that had been scattered on the floor, setting them on the counter to be washed or put away. Cleaning the kitchen seemed like the least important problem in her opinion, but she didn't want to do anything to irritate the Loveridges. She did not want to be left alone. 7. Austin's eyes felt like sandpaper had been rubbed over them. He blinked several times, trying to orientate himself to his surroundings. It was the throbbing in his leg that brought it all back in a painful flash. "Savannah," he mumbled, moving a hand to his face, rubbing the beard stubble, and then his eyes. Finally, he opened his eyes, staring up at the ceiling of Amanda's living room. He was on the couch, his broken leg piled high on several pillows. He looked down at his body, covered with a blanket, and could see his toes peeking out. He didn't dare try to wiggle them. He'd done that once and paid a hefty price. Simply enough, he was stuck. Helpless. He couldn't walk out of the house and get to his daughter. Not even if he tried. "Hey!" Amanda's scratchy voice had come from behind him, and he shifted to look for her. "What time is it?" he asked. She laughed, the emotion behind it genuine. "I have no idea. I would guess around 8 or 9, maybe. How's the leg?" "It's fine. I need to get out of here, Amanda. I didn't mean to sleep so late," he groaned. "I'll get you another pain pill and some antibiotics." "You'll need to take them with food. I'll see what I can throw together," she said, yawning. He watched her fold a blanket and put it on the coffee table next to the couch. "Did you sleep out here?" he asked her. "Yep, I slept in the recliner just in case you started running a fever or got some wild idea to try and walk out of here," she said, stretching her back. "Thank you," he said, wishing again that he didn't need this kind woman's help. "Of course. Sit tight and I'll be back in a second." Austin closed his eyes, breathing through a fresh wave of pain. He knew from experience that it was the second day of an injury that was always the worst. But he'd broken enough bones to also know that the pain was temporary. He could get through it. He heard a knock on the front door then, and his eyes popped open as he involuntarily stiffened, pulling the tender bruised muscles in his broken leg. With his position on the couch, he was blind to seeing much of anything. He could see the top half of the front door over the back of the couch, but little else. He felt completely exposed under this blanket in only his underwear, unable to walk. He needed his clothes. Suddenly, he remembered the drive Callum had given him. He wondered if it was still in his pocket, and if so, if it had been ruined by his impromptu swim. The case had looked waterproof, but there was no way to tell for sure without testing the thing. How to do that was something else entirely. Interrupting his thoughts, Amanda walked through to the door. "Who is it?" she called out without opening it. That was smart, Austin thought. But if anyone on the other side wanted in, the door wasn't going to do much good stopping them.
"It's Daniel Carver. I got a heifer trying to calve it, and it ain't going well. Can you come help?" he hollered through the door.
Austin waited to hear what Amanda would do. He sat up on his elbows, peering over the couch, and watched her open the door, propping a long .22 rifle behind it. He smiled. She was very smart.
"Daniel, hey there," she greeted the man she obviously knew.
"Do you have phone service?" She popped her head outside. "Did you drive over here?" A tall, lanky man wearing Wranglers, a button-up plaid, and a white cowboy hat stepped through the door when Amanda stepped back inside. Austin didn't have to see his feet to know he'd be wearing boots. The guy was a legit cowboy. He pulled off his hat, revealing a full head of brown hair that was a little too long, a ring around his head from where the hat had been sitting.
"My truck is toast," he said, nodding to Austin now that he saw him. "I don't know what happened. I rode my horse over here. My phone doesn't work either, or I would have called you. I'm real sorry to barge in here like this, but she's been laboring all night. I waited as long as I could, but I would really appreciate your help, he pleaded. Amanda looked at Austin, then back at her friend.
Sure. Let me grab my things and change. You go ahead and I'll be right behind you.
You gonna drive over? He asked. The battery in my truck died and I haven't had a chance to do anything about it.
Daniel nodded at her and then glanced over at Austin one last time before walking out the door.
Austin had a feeling there was a little jealousy happening there. Daniel was probably in his 40s and Austin hadn't noticed a ring on his finger. He probably had the hots for the very pretty vet and didn't appreciate finding a man on a couch.
Amanda closed the door behind him and then looked to Austin as if to judge what Daniel would have seen or guessed was going on. With a chuckle, she shrugged before disappearing back into the kitchen. She came back a minute later with a can of Sprite and a bowl.
"Are you sure it's safe for you to go?" he asked.
She raised an eyebrow at him.
"I've known Daniel most of my life. He's a good guy, and I can take care of myself anyway. As for you, here is a bowl of Raisin Bran minus the milk and a warm Sprite to wash down the meds. I know it isn't gourmet, but it will put something in your stomach."
He moved to sit up a little more, even as Amanda sprang into action, piling pillows behind him to prop him up.
"Thank you. Seriously, I cannot tell you how glad I am it was you who pulled me out of that water."
She grinned.
"You did need a vet, that's for sure. Now eat and take your meds. I need to change and get over to Daniel's."
Austin used the spoon to take a bite of the dry cereal. He nearly choked on the dry bran flakes. The can of warm soda barely helped wash down the cereal, and then he popped the pills in his mouth and took another drink.
"Are my clothes nearby?" he called out, not sure where she was in the house.
"I'll grab them. I hung them out to dry last night. Hopefully they've had a chance," she called out in response, her voice muffled.
Amanda came into view a few minutes later.
"I'm going to leave my rifle next to you, just in case. Here's your clothes. The jeans are still a little damp."
"Great," he mumbled, eyeing the rifle and knowing he could do little to fend off an attacker in his current condition.
"I'll be back as fast as I can. Daniel is capable. Once I deliver the calf, I'll be back," she told him.
He looked at the brown duffel bag she was carrying, with Amanda Patterson displayed in gold lettering on the side.
"Be safe," he said, hoping it wasn't the last time he saw her.
What else could he do but wait, though? He truly was at her mercy, something he didn't like in the least. He had never been helpless.
"Trust me, calving is icky, but it isn't dangerous," she said with a smile.
Austin finished the cereal only because he knew the pain meds required it, the roof of his mouth feeling a little abused by the crunchy flakes. Having set the bowl down, he then leaned back against the pillows and let his eyes roam around the room. The silence was mind-boggling. He'd been on the little farm for a couple weeks with Savannah, but it had never been this quiet. Here there was nothing to break up the monotony of silence. No train whistles or rumbles of a diesel engine in the distance. He couldn't hear planes or anything overhead. It was dead silent. It was as if the wildlife that was normally out and about didn't want to disturb the quiet. He strained his ears, listening for the sound of a bird call, and still heard nothing. It was too weird, too strange, and being alone and unable to move stirred up a little panic deep in his gut. Out of nowhere, he heard the screech of a hawk. Relief washed over him. For a brief moment, he'd been worried they were dealing with something much more sinister than an EMP.
"Okay, everything is still normal, minus electricity," he assured himself. He relaxed for a few moments, but then realized he was facing another problem that was far more pressing than the lack of bird calls outside.
"Seriously," he groaned, reaching for the crutches that were lying on the ground next to the Remington 22. He had to pee. Having been on the couch for a good 12 hours, of course, he needed the bathroom. He was actually a little glad Amanda wasn't around now. She would have insisted on helping him, and that was the last thing he wanted help with from a complete stranger, let alone a pretty female stranger. He threw off the blanket, only then remembering he was essentially naked. He debated on struggling with the jeans, or taking the chance that he was well and truly alone, and going outside only in his boxers. It would certainly make what he needed to do a lot easier. Boxers it was. He had to go, after all, and knew it would be a long process to get his jeans on, especially considering they were still damp. He gently moved his wrapped leg, wincing with pain as he lifted it, turning his body at the same time and carefully putting it down. He grabbed one crutch, standing it in front of him, while using his right arm to push himself off the couch. "Damn it," he growled as the pain washed over him. He managed to get to a standing position, though his leg felt like a lead ball hanging from his thigh. There would be no water, so using the toilet would be pointless. He was going to have to go outside. He vaguely remembered the covered porch he'd had to climb to get into the house. "Screw that," he mumbled. He was not going down those stairs. He'd pee off the end of the porch. Desperate times called for desperate measures and a shelving of proper etiquette. There was no way he could go in search of a tree. Just getting out the door was painful enough, but he hobbled along to the end of the porch facing away from the driveway and the swollen stream beyond it. As he relieved himself, he scanned the area. The burnt-out remains of Amanda's barn were on his left, pasture beyond it. Directly in front of him, he could see what looked like corn growing about a foot high, moving in the slight breeze washing over the farm. The air was already warm, and he could smell the charcoal and hint of smoke lingering in the air as the breeze kicked up. He used the crutches to walk back to the opposite end of the covered porch and saw her Ford 250 sitting in the driveway. He smiled, thinking they were kindred spirits with matching rigs, his just a little newer and shinier. He scanned the area before heading back inside. His body was stiff and sore. He knew that without the pain meds she'd given him, he'd have been in far more pain. It was his good fortune that had brought her to his rescue. Now he needed just a little more good luck to leave and find his daughter. Seeing the barn's remains had given him an idea, though. They couldn't drive off, and he was in no shape to walk 40 miles on crutches. But surely he could ride a horse. When Amanda got back, he was going to ask her to borrow one. He'd find a way to pay her or return the horse once things returned to normal. Fumbling his way back inside, he tried not to think about the fact that normal could be a long way away. Austin sat on the couch as carefully as he could, propping his leg back up and relaxing against the pillows. He was sweating with the exertion it had taken to go pee. That didn't bode well for his grand plans to ride a horse 40 miles back to his trailer. Maybe tomorrow things would look brighter. For now, he'd have to trust Bob Little to look out for his daughter. With that depressing thought, Austin tossed the blanket over his thighs, leaving his bare chest and lower legs exposed, before closing his eyes and trying to breathe through the pain that was racking his body. He could feel the drowsiness growing with every passing second now, and welcomed the idea of sleeping through the pain. Soon he felt himself drifting off, and didn't fight the urge to close his eyes. "What the hell?" he snapped, jerking awake at the sound of a loud crash. He jerked up to his seated position, only remembering he wasn't in good shape after his leg fell off the pillow. He cursed out loud, nearly biting his tongue. It felt like he'd broken the bone all over again. He didn't have time to worry about the pain, though. Someone was in the house, and he was only lucky he'd cursed quietly instead of screamed outright. He gingerly rolled off the couch with the help of one crutch, finding the rifle, and quickly checking to see if it was loaded. One bullet was not going to do him a lot of good, he thought angrily. What good was a gun with a single bullet? Whoever was in the house was in the back room. They must not have seen him lying on the couch, and he had been hopped up on painkillers and not heard a thing until they'd gotten careless and loud with whatever they were doing. "It's in that cabinet," a male voice called out. More than one person in the house then, which meant he absolutely needed more than a single bullet. A gun cabinet with a glass door was against the wall nearby, and he could see a shotgun and what looked to be another long rifle in the rack. He hated gun cabinets with glass doors. They were completely ineffective for actually keeping the gun safe. But in this case, it was a godsend. Not wasting another second, he pulled himself over to the cabinet, hoping there were some cartridges stored there. The gun cabinet was locked, of course. He looked around and saw a framed picture of an older couple sitting on an end table. He grabbed it and did his best to shatter the glass as quietly as possible, using a nearby Afghan to muffle the sound. He could hear the men in the other room knocking things over and talking to one another. He was praying they were too loud to hear him. Using one hand to keep himself propped up via the crutch, he kept one eye on the hallway as he reached in and found several boxes of shells and bullets. Without hesitating, he pulled the long rifle off the rack, quickly loaded the gun, and waited, knowing the thieves would be tossing the rest of the house soon enough. Leaning against the cabinet, the crutch under his armpit, he could just stay steady enough to use the rifle if he needed to. Waiting allowed the pain to come back to him, though, along with the drowsiness the meds had brought on. Austin blinked, trying to focus his eyes. The pain was crippling, and ignoring it was getting harder. He had to focus on making sure his aim was true when those men appeared. It had been a while since he'd shot a rifle, and he wasn't looking forward to taking a life. But he would do whatever was necessary to stay alive. "Come on, let's see if there's any food," he heard one of the male voices say. He held the gun barrel up, pressing the butt against his shoulder, his finger hovering over the trigger. "Whoa!" the first man down the hall called out when he noticed Austin propped against the gun cabinet, and in nothing but a neon pink leg cast and his boxers. "What?" his buddy asked, appearing with a small box. "Put whatever it is you're trying to steal down, and get out of here before I kill you," Austin growled, gesturing to the door with the rifle. The two men, or maybe older teens, were scruffy and unshaven. They looked to be homeless, and Austin would have bet money they were drug addicts. Only drug use had a way of making young men look so aged and worn. "Dude, you can't even walk," one of the guys shot back. "I don't need to walk," Austin answered. "I only need to shoot. Put the box down and leave," he repeated, his voice calm and steady. The two addicts exchanged a look, and Austin saw the moment they decided to ignore his demands. He fired off a shot, aiming over their heads so that it slammed into the wall directly behind them. Then he cocked the rifle again, prepared to shoot one or both of them if necessary. "Dude!" one of them screamed, though the other seemed frozen. "That was a warning shot. Put the box down, or I shoot you first," he said, aiming the barrel at the guy carrying the box. "Then you," he said, moving the barrel to the other man, lining it up with his face. The men looked at one another again, then back to Austin.
"You can't chase us. We could just run out of here," the guy holding the box reasoned.
Austin smirked.
"Run? I don't mind shooting you in the back. Can you outrun a bullet?"
"Leave it. We'll find stuff somewhere else," the first guy said, looking anxious. There was a moment of hesitation from the guy with the box before he dropped it on the ground, pill bottles rolling out. Austin looked at him evenly, one eyebrow raised as he realized they had been stealing Amanda's vet medicine.
"Get now, before I decide to shoot you anyway," he warned them a moment later, when it seemed they were still debating their next move.
With that, the guys raced for the front door, leaving it open behind them. Austin didn't move in response. He just held the gun up, aimed at the door, in case the guys came back. Eventually, his arm grew tired, and he slowly lowered the gun, putting the safety on before resting it beside his outstretched legs. That had been close, and the tweakers weren't going to be the last of it. He had a feeling that anyone in the area who knew Amanda was a vet was going to be trying to do the same thing. Medicine and painkillers were going to be a valuable commodity. Meanwhile, Savannah was out there all alone in the chaos. The thought of her encountering guys like he just had made his heart hurt. He had to get to her, to protect her. His only prayer was that the farm they'd been staying on was far enough off the beaten path that no one would mess with her. And while Bob Little was an old man, he was feisty. He'd protect Savannah until Austin could get there. There was enough food in the trailer for her to survive the next few days, at least. The water tank was full, too, which meant she would have clean drinking water. "The pump," he groaned then, realizing the pump would require electricity to run. Okay, so she wouldn't have water in the RV. But Bob had to have a water tank somewhere on the property. Savannah was smart enough to know she had to boil the water first. Thinking of that, Austin took some small comfort in knowing their time traveling the country in the trailer had given her some basic knowledge in camping off-grid, and knowing how to handle a situation like this, much as anyone could if they hadn't been expecting it. His eyes drifted to his bright pink leg before he looked down at his chest, the large gauze bandage on his ribs standing out against his tanned skin. There was no denying he was in rough shape. He couldn't simply get off the couch and go to his kid. The feeling of being helpless was hard to cope with, but he'd have to accept it, no matter what his parental instincts were screaming at him. Normally, he was a strong, capable man, not the man sitting on the floor, unable to stand on his own. But that wasn't today. Today, he was just short of helpless. The only way he could help Savannah was to give himself a day or two to heal. "I'm coming, Savannah. I'm coming. You hold on. Then stay safe," he whispered, fighting back the sudden tears that threatened to fall as he imagined her all alone, scared out of her mind.
8. Savannah lay in the bed where her father should have been sleeping. She couldn't sleep in the farmer's house with the rest of the group. She wanted to stay in the trailer in case her dad came back in the middle of the night. Night after night, she waited up, hoping she would hear his truck pull up outside. There had been so many times when she'd fallen asleep and dreamed she heard the sound and woke up, expecting to see him standing there, wondering why she was in his bed. Every time she'd been left sad and disappointed to find it was only a dream. She heard a knock on the door of the trailer and pulled the pillow over her head. She didn't want to face the day. Every day had been a fight to keep the Loveridge family there. They wanted to go. They reminded her of that fact all day long.
"Are you awake?" Malachi called out in a soft voice.
The thin doors of the fifth wheel did little to block sound. She rolled out of the comfy, queen-sized bed and got to her feet, opening the door that separated the bedroom from the living space of their trailer and moving to unlock the door. Malachi was standing outside,
smiling and holding out a plate of scrambled eggs.
"Hi," she said, stepping down to meet him.
"My mom made you some eggs," he said, presenting her with the breakfast. The Loveridge family was resourceful. Every morning, Jim built a small fire in a fire pit in front of the house, and every morning, for the past 3 days, Tanya had eggs collected from the hens that the rancher had kept. The thieves hadn't taken the chickens, most likely because catching chickens was a lot like herding cats. There'd been talk about butchering one of the hens to eat for dinner, but no one in the group had the first clue about how to go about killing and plucking the bird.
Savannah smiled. "Thank you."
She stood back, letting Malachi into the trailer. She self-consciously smoothed her hair down, slightly embarrassed to be seeing him the moment she rolled out of bed. The power still hadn't been restored, which surprised Savannah. Jim Loveridge was only more convinced he was right, and that they were headed for the so-called end times.
"Are you going to eat?" she asked, a little put off by being the only one with a meal in front of her.
"I already ate," he said with an easy smile. She took the plate and sat it on the table, gesturing for him to sit across from her. He took a seat, but awkwardly, and suddenly she could tell by the look on his face something was wrong. He was acting different, and now that he was inside the RV, he wouldn't look her in the eyes.
"What's wrong?" she asked quietly, pushing the plate to the side.
"Savannah, my parents, they want to leave," he said, apology coming through in his voice.
"What, already?
It's been 3 whole days. My dad said he's already given you a day more than he agreed to."
"But Dad's not back yet."
Malachi looked out the window instead of at her.
"I know, but it isn't safe here. Those men yesterday who passed by on the road, they could have hurt us. My dad says he knows they'll come back with guns.
Savannah, we don't have guns. We have nothing to defend ourselves with. The baseball bat, shovels, and pitchforks are no match for a gun."
She shook her head, thinking about the group Malachi was talking about.
"They were only looking for food. They left when they saw your dad's friend come out of the barn with that shovel," she insisted.
He sighed, still avoiding her gaze.
She followed his gaze, watching his mother heading off into the trees with a small shovel. Their bathroom situation wasn't pleasant.
"But what if it's someone else next time?" he asked.
"What if the people who shot that poor farmer come back?" he pointed out.
"Don't you think the police or National Guard will be here soon?" she asked.
He shrugged.
"Maybe."
"Then we can wait a couple more days," she begged. She stared into his brown eyes, waiting for him to agree. His hair had been pulled back into a ponytail, giving her a clear view of his face, but he still wouldn't meet her eyes.
"It's not up to me, Savannah. I don't want you to be hurt. This is for the best."
She groaned, fighting the urge to throw the plate of eggs at the wall.
"I can't go. You said we would look for him today."
"I'm sorry. I will ask my dad if we can go into town again, but I have a feeling you'll say no. It's too dangerous," Malachi stated, not for the first time.
"Malachi, I can't leave my dad," she whispered, tears threatening.
"Savannah, he isn't here. We haven't found his truck. Don't you think he would have come back by now if he could? You have to think about whether or not something's happened to him." Her mouth fell open.
"Don't say that."
It was something they had all been tiptoeing around the last couple of days, but she wouldn't think of it. Not really. Savannah knew her dad wasn't supposed to have been going far when he'd left that night. He had told her he'd be gone an hour, maybe two. It made sense he would have walked back to the trailer if he could, yeah, but that only meant something had delayed him. It didn't mean he'd been hurt. Or worse.
"I want you to be safe. Come with us. Let us protect you. Let me protect you, Malachi begged her, his eyes suddenly catching hers. How is it going to be safer at your home? How can you protect me? You said a shovel wasn't enough, she snapped, using his own defense to prove her point. Our city might not be in the dark. This could be isolated to this region, he said, parroting the words she'd heard Jim say several times. And if it isn't? What if the city is dark? You think the craziness here is bad? Imagine what it will be like in the city. We don't live in the city, but on the outskirts, he corrected her. She rolled her eyes. We're out in the boonies here, and it's dangerous. Savannah, we have to go back home, Malachi said simply. It's where we belong, he said, reaching across the table and grabbing her hand. I have to try and find him, she insisted, though she didn't pull her hand away. Malachi nodded, pulling his hand from hers before pushing the plate back towards her. Eat. You need to keep up your strength. She sighed, knowing that they were at an impasse, and he wouldn't leave her alone until she ate the eggs. The chickens had been laying regularly, providing the Loveridges and their small group of followers with food, but the whole group had been eating plentifully. They'd found a deep freeze in the basement filled with beef, too, and Savannah knew that the stockpiled meat had helped make it easier for Jim Loveridge to keep his group on the farm for longer than planned. They had feasted on steaks that first night, and had been eating well at every meal since. Everyone had agreed that it would make sense to ration what food they had, but since nobody knew how to turn the beef into jerky, and there weren't enough canned goods to expect them to last long anyway, they'd been eating what was available. Jim refused to contemplate the idea that they'd eventually have to loot for more food, though, and insisted that God would provide for them, just as Bob Little's farm had provided for them over these few days. Savannah was beginning to wonder what God's provisions would look like if things got worse before they got better. She realized she really was in the wrong group. But it wasn't like she had a lot of options. She finished the eggs that had long grown cold, and Malachi left her alone to change clothes. He was supposed to try to convince his father to let them go back into town, but she had a feeling that he was anxious to leave as well. There was nothing here for any of them. She was holding them all back. And she'd never forgive herself if something happened to them because they'd chosen to stay and wait with her. 9. Malachi Loveridge sat down in one of the plastic lawn chairs, doing his best to relax. The big fifth wheel wasn't too far away, parked under a few trees to keep it shielded from the hot sun. He felt as if he were being pulled in two as he looked from the fifth wheel back to the house, where his family and their friends were resting. His heart wanted to stay with Savannah, but duty told him he had to stay with his family. He wasn't the type of kid to rebel against his parents, either. They'd worked hard to shelter him from the tragedies of the world. He didn't even feel the need to rebel against them. They'd always homeschooled him, choosing to educate him in the Bible instead of math books, and he loved traveling the country with them. People always asked him if he felt like he was missing out on things other kids his age did, but he didn't. Not really. At least, not until now. Any question of what other kids did brought to mind dating, socializing. And lately, Malachi only thought about Savannah. She was different than the other girls he had met. Plenty of girls came to the revivals, but none of them were as pretty or as smart as Savannah. She was special. He'd known it the moment he'd first seen her. Since then, his parents had talked to him a little about his feelings for her and warned him to be careful. She wasn't a believer in the Bible and could lead him astray if he wasn't careful. And he knew that. But he was also sure she could one day be just as faithful as his family if he got the time to teach her.
"Son, you look so peaceful out here," his mother said, coming to sit beside him in another lawn chair. "Mom, can we stay another day?" he asked. "Oh, Mal, you know what your father said." "I do, but isn't it our duty to comfort the hurt?" he asked, purposefully using her own words. She smiled. "You're a good son. You know we will do all we can to help your friend, but we have to think of her safety as well as yours. We can't force her to come with us, but we can pray about it." "What if she's the chosen one for me?" She looked a little surprised. "Malachi," she breathed out. "Really, do you feel that connection with this girl?" He shrugged, uncomfortable with the way his mother was suddenly appraising him. "I don't know. I feel something for her." His mother reached out to him, putting her hand on his knee. "You're a young man growing into manhood. Young, pretty girls are going to catch your eye. They are a temptation. You have to be strong." "Mom," he groaned. She shook her head, the very motion cutting off more of a complaint. "Malachi, you know what is right and wrong. If she comes with us, and you believe she is the one chosen for you, she will need to accept our Lord and Savior. You cannot let a pretty girl lead you down the wrong road," she reminded him. Following his gaze to the RV, she patted his leg and walked away. He'd had a feeling that's what she would say. His parents would never allow him to marry a woman who didn't believe the same as they did. But Savannah was young, and he felt sure he could teach her to be a faithful follower of the Bible. His parents had always told him he'd meet someone made just for him, who'd follow with him on this path. It had never felt possible until he'd met Savannah. That had to mean something. As if she'd felt him thinking about her, Savannah exited her trailer and headed his way. Her long hair blew out in front of her. He smiled, watching her push it away. He could see the stress and worry on her face, and hated to see her hurting. He wanted to make her smile again. "Hi," she said, taking the seat his mother had vacated. "You look nice today," he complimented her. She groaned. "I need a shower." "You're beautiful." "Thank you," she murmured, a flush rising in her cheeks as she glanced away. "What did your mom say? Did you ask her if you could stay another day?" she asked anxiously. He nodded, looking away. "I did. They say we are leaving early in the morning." She put her head back, looking at the sky and sighing. "He has to come back." "I'm sorry, Savannah. I really am. I can't imagine what you're going through. My family is here for you, though. They will take you in. You can live with us." She turned to look at him, horror on her face. "My dad isn't dead." He sighed. "Okay, but until you find him, you should stay with us." She was quiet for seconds, and then a full minute. Finally, he saw something shift in her face. "Okay," she said. He sat up straighter, shocked she'd given in. "Really?" Yeah, I think so. I don't want to be here alone. I've been thinking about it a lot today, and I think it's what my dad would want me to do. He'd want me to stay safe. I'll leave him a note, letting him know where we're going so that he can come after me whenever he gets back." Malachi couldn't stop smiling. "Great! Let's go tell my parents!" He grabbed her hand, and together they headed inside the house. His father was sitting at the dining room table, a map spread out in front of him. He and one of the revivalists were quietly talking, tracing their fingers over the map. "Dad!" Malachi called out. His father turned to look at them, his eyes going to their joined hands before looking back at his son's face. "What is it, Mal?" he asked. "Savannah will be going with us tomorrow,"
he announced, pride and excitement feeling like they'd burst his chest. His father's eyes lit up.
Great!
His face turned to Savannah's, grinning in relief. I look forward to having you along.
What are you doing?
She asked, moving forward to look at the map. We're planning our route home, he replied. She stared at the map, and then spoke slowly. I know this place, she said, putting her finger on Colorado, near to where Jim Loveridge's finger had been left pointing.
You do?
Malachi asked, moving forward. Her eyes lit up as she turned to him.
Yes, my Uncle Ennis lives in the area, right outside of Denver. It's on the way to Salt Lake City. I can go there and wait for my dad.
Malachi couldn't help feeling a little disappointed to hear she was still looking for a way not to go back to the city with them, but he swallowed down the emotion.
Great,
he said, faking the enthusiasm in his voice. At least she'd still be traveling with them. Savannah looked happier than she had in days, too, which made him happy.
I should go pack, she exclaimed.
And with that, she gripped his hand with a tight squeeze before hurrying away. He watched her walk out of the house before turning back to his dad, trying to hide the disappointment he felt. She loves her family, his father said quietly. Malachi nodded. I know. If it's meant to be, it will happen. Don't push these things. Dad, we need to arm ourselves, he said, abruptly changing the subject. His father stared back at him a moment, as if processing the jump, but then shook his head. No, we will not raise arms against anyone. We are all God's children. It's dangerous, Dad. You've said it time and again. We have to be able to protect ourselves. We can't carry those shovels and pitchforks 500 miles, Malachi argued. We will not hurt people, his father said, standing up to face him. Jim, he's right, his friend Ken said. All but holding his breath now that an adult had voiced agreement with him, Malachi waited for his dad to say it was wrong and went against the Ten Commandments. He turned back to look at him, a sadness in his eyes. To his surprise, he confessed, You're right. I saw a gun in the closet of the master bedroom. I'll get it, Malachi said, relieved at the idea that he would have a weapon to defend his family and Savannah. He would not ask his father to carry the gun or use it. It would kill his father if he had to take another man's life. Malachi would carry that burden. Malachi walked to the back bedroom, opening the closet and rummaging around in the dark until he saw the small wooden box on the floor. He pulled it out and opened it, finding a revolver. It looked to be an old gun, like the kind cowboys used in the old days. Malachi carefully took it out of the box, feeling the weight of it in his hands. He tried to turn the circular barrel, but had no real idea how to check to see if it was loaded. Carefully, he instead carried the gun out to the dining table, where Ken was still sitting with his father.
Ken, do you know how to check and see if there are bullets in here?
He asked, holding the gun at his side, pointed at the ground. His father looked at the gun, shaking his head before excusing himself. Ken rose and took the gun from Malachi's hand, holding it in his palm and smiling. This is an old gun, a Smith & Wesson Chief Special, he said with awe, as he easily popped open the barrel and showed Malachi. Empty. We'll need to see if we can find some rounds. It looks like it's in good shape, but I'd hate to have this thing misfire and hurt someone. How do we know what kind of bullets it needs? Malachi asked, completely unfamiliar with firearms. This is a .38 special. She packs a punch, assuming we can find something to load her with, Ken replied, closing the barrel and placing the gun on the table. Malachi stared at it, wondering if he could use the gun to actually hurt someone. It suddenly felt wrong, as his father had always said it was. Jim Loveridge wasn't a man who believed in an eye for an eye. He believed in the sacredness of life, God's greatest gift, and felt that nobody had the right to steal such a life from another man, no matter what.
"Maybe we should leave it," Malachi said in a low voice. "Dad thinks..."
Ken put a hand on Malachi's shoulder, cutting him off. "I'll handle it. You and your dad don't need to worry about this," he assured him. Malachi nodded, not without some relief, and headed out of the house. His earlier conviction to take on the burden for his father was waning. He wasn't sure he was ready to take on the responsibility that came with being the group's primary protector, as that gun would assuredly make him. 10. Austin used the crutches to move across the soft earth of the pasture, making his way towards Amanda, who was chatting happily to her horses. The pain was still present in his leg, but it was more of a dull ache now, thanks to the pain meds. It was the cut on his side that had been bothering him more than anything that day. It made it difficult to move on the crutches, stretching and pulling the injured skin.
"What are you doing?" Amanda gasped when she saw him walking towards her.
"I got tired of sitting on that couch," he answered simply. He also wanted to prove to her that he wasn't a complete invalid. He needed to show her he could move around without a great deal of pain. It was the only way he was going to convince her he was ready to leave her farm. "Austin, you can't overdo it," she lectured him, one hand still on her horse's nose. He ignored her comment, looking at the mare she was petting. There were three other horses happily eating grass a short distance away.
"Can we ride them?" he asked.
"I can ride them fine," she returned. He shook his head. "I can't stay here any longer. I need to get back. I understand you don't want to go. I'm not asking you to. But I am asking you to let me borrow a horse."
"I can't let you go alone, and you know it," she said, her lips tightening with frustration.
"I don't know that it's up to you. And I know for damn sure that you can't stop me if I want to leave," he growled. They had been having the same argument for days. He'd been itching to go, while she had been adamant he not leave until he'd healed, or healed more, at least. The cut on his rib cage had been mildly infected. Making the situation worse, he'd ripped a stitch out yesterday while maneuvering on the crutches, earning him a stern lecture from his pseudo-doctor.
"Amanda, I appreciate all you've done for me. I really do. But I can't sit here knowing Savannah's out there on her own. I'm assuming you don't have children, all things considered. But if you did, maybe you'd understand what I'm feeling a little better," he said, trying to be as gentle as possible with the rebuke.
Her eyes narrowed, and her hands dropped to her hips.
"No, I don't have kids, but that doesn't make me inhuman or unable to understand basic emotions. I understand you want to get her, Austin, but you're no good to her dead."
He glared at her, unwilling to back down. "I'm not being mean. I'm only trying to make you understand how hard this is for me. It's killing me not being able to be there for her."
"So you think killing yourself trying to get there is a better idea?" she replied, eyeing his crutches pointedly.
"I have to try. That's what parents do. They walk through fire to get to their kids. I'm the only parent she has," he near yelled, the frustration of being laid up and essentially useless boiling over as he thought of his lost wife. His daughter only had one parent to depend on, and here he was in the middle of a pasture in the middle of nowhere, USA, 40 miles from his kid. She stomped a foot, calling his attention back to her.
"I'm trying to keep you alive for your daughter."
"Good. Great. You succeeded. But now I have to get back home," he said, trying to calm his voice. Losing their tempers and going in circles was getting them nowhere. In the back of his mind, he knew Amanda had been right to keep him planted on her couch for the first few days. He would have killed himself if it had been left to him. But now... You know, if you were such a great father, looking out for his daughter, maybe you shouldn't have jumped off a bridge, she snapped. He rolled his eyes. I didn't jump off the bridge. Oh, really? Now you're ready to tell me the story? She asked. He wasn't about to tell her the story. Not yet. He didn't know her and didn't know how much he could trust her. Plus, he certainly didn't want to put her life in danger. He had no idea if the people who had killed Callum would still be looking for him or not. But the USB drive was in his pocket, still encased in its protective plastic case. He wasn't sure what he was going to do with it, but something told him to hold on to it and keep his mouth shut about the damn thing. I fell into the water, he muttered, his eyes going back to the horses. How difficult would it be to get on and off was what worried him more than anything else. Whatever. Not only are you in no condition to walk or ride 40 miles, but I can't leave my animals, my house, and all of my supplies untended. Look what happened when you were in the house. If people figure out I'm gone, they're going to loot my house, she said. They've already tried, he replied dryly. She rolled her eyes. Tweakers are nothing new. They're always around. Then stay. I'm going, he said firmly. You don't know where you're going, she reminded him. I'll find the highway and go from there, he shot back. Have you ever ridden a horse? She asked, the hand back on her hip and a snide look on her face. Yes, Amanda, I've ridden a horse. Is that all you needed to hear? She smiled, but it wasn't a friendly smile. It was cynical and made him a little nervous. Have you ever ridden bareback? My saddles were in the barn that burned to the ground the night I was fishing you out of the stream. How hard can it be? He asked. She threw her head back and laughed, harder than he'd seen her laugh before, her black hair blowing around her. Oh, piece of cake! That's why everybody does it, she said with a heavy dose of sarcasm. He looked at the horse standing next to her, and then at the others contentedly grazing. What about that one? He pointed to a chestnut that looked significantly smaller than the black mare in front of him, and smaller meant he'd have an easier time getting up on the creature's back. You want to ride him? Are you saying he's not a good horse to ride? He countered. I'm saying I ride him all the time. But you? Well, you'll die if you try to climb onto his back. She grinned. Plus, he's too small for you. At your height, you'd only hurt him. He raised an eyebrow. Okay, so I'm too tall, he acknowledged. You want to tell me why I'd die climbing on his back? Because Johnny's mean and fast. Two things I know you can't handle. Austin glanced back to the harmless-looking horse. Oh. We can try you with this girl, maybe. Raven is a kind soul. She'll probably only try and throw you once or twice, she said with a chuckle, nearly making Austin rethink the whole idea. He couldn't let the thought of falling stop him, though. He had to get back to his kid, and the only way that was going to happen was on the back of a horse. Okay, how do I get up?